Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and Kirk Gray's on the line. Hey, Kirk.
Hi, Fred. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, happy Tuesday. I'm glad I was able to connect with you today.
Yeah.
You know, I got a new chainsaw the other day.
Those are fun.
Oh, they are fun. And my wife has had a, when I married her, she had a, or still has, an electric one. And I didn't realize how dull the blade was. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I get this brand new chain and new, brand new saw, and it's like cutting butter with a hot knife compared to the old one.
I know.
And it,
you say, man, how much work, extra work was I doing with that old chainsaw?
That's right. You know,
waiting for it to grind through.
It's, you know, it's part of the process, though, is sometimes it's hard to tell. You know, when something actually is worn out or wearing out, it can be a really gradual process. You know, but before we jump into this topic, I want to talk more about how do you know something's worn out? How do you tell, right? If it doesn't just outright break. But before we get into that, let's make a little space for an advertisement here, one of our ad spots.
Kirk Gray here. We want you to know that my company, Accelerated Reliability Solutions, is ready to support you with experienced leadership, guidance, and training to rapidly develop reliable, robust, and mature electronics at market introduction. To get started, go to accendoreliability.com/go/accelerated.
Now, these little ad spots, we're experimenting with these, Kirk, and I think it was you're the first one that's recorded a couple with us, and then we're working on getting some more in the rotation. But, you know, we put a lot of time in it. I just realized we've been recording these for about 2.5 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and it's fun. We have a great time doing it, yet it's also, you know, we still got to keep the lights on. So hopefully the ad spots get you to look at some of our other material, take a look at our businesses, things like that. So that's why we're doing those.
Right. We want to get some other eyes looking and see what there's a whole bunch on Accendo Reliability for everybody to investigate. And so I hope it leads to more exploration of your site.
Yeah, I hope so. But also I'm hoping we get some more questions. And one of them that we've kind of brought up from our last episode, and it's a question that's been on my mind a lot. And before we started recording, you mentioned that you'd just gotten an injection of micro beads. And I equated it to you that they should just put a lube fitting on your knee and just pump you up every couple of weeks or something like that.
And that's exactly what they're kind of doing, except they use a needle and they feed it into my knee between the two surfaces, I guess, where the meniscus is normally.
Well, it used to be.
And it could prevent these two bones from rubbing together. So it's providing a little viscosity, increase in viscosity to provide a kind of an artificial pad. But it only lasts 6 months or each one lasts.
How does it
months.
Feel when you walk out of, I mean, in the next week or so, can you tell the difference?
Well, and that's another interesting thing about it. It takes a few weeks for it to actually become settled and provide relief. Mm-hmm. So it's been pretty good. And, you know, I've heard people can do it for up to 5 years, every 6 months getting these injections, which is good because, unfortunately, just like a machine part, artificial knees do wear out. And my orthopedic surgeon says if about 15 years is the life of a knee, although they're starting to make more replaceable parts.
The artificial knee?
Field replaceable,
meniscus. In the, so you open a little hatch on the side of your knee and slide in a new a new bearing.
Yeah, where you don't have to replace the two endpoints, you know, the two
the
surface.
Bones, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because it's obviously it's a fairly major surgery to do that. So hopefully I can extend the wear out mode of this knee, which has been injured in a skiing accident and has reached a point of being difficult, but it's working. And if I extend that, then I've got that much more time with an artificial knee when I do have to replace it. So,
okay. But, well, but you can tell, right? Because it hurts.
Yes, I get the feedback, and that's the basic mechanism. Although I can also hear a clicking noise in my knee. It's kind of interesting, but, you know, those two things, are what caused me, to go back. In this case, this is my second iteration of injections over a year, and it's actually I'm kind of doing it as a preventative measure since I know it works. I haven't gotten to a pain level, you know, waiting till it's painful.
Right. But, well, it makes sense. Yeah, it's. Yeah. I guess you're doing the preventative maintenance schedule now, and
now that I found out about it and it's working, I'll continue to do that probably before it actually causes me to start limping along.
Yeah. Well, it also is, you know, with pain, then it's pain medications to you know, is a emergency type response. It doesn't really correct anything, but it keeps you moving. It creates more damage in a lot of cases. There's a lot of parallels to equipment, right?
Right. In fact, you talk about some of the indicators in equipment that may be something that, you know, you pay attention to, like a motor and vibration. Mm-hmm. We know as the motor starts to bearings start to wear, we're going to see more vibration. Those are, you know, and if I feel my car, the engine vibrating more or something rougher, it makes me question whether there's some problems with maybe the firing of the piston or, you know, something.
The timing.
Happening.
We used to call it timing. A timing.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's the distributor
that was mechanical.
Cap.
Right. Yeah. It had a rotating armature. Right?
Yeah. Armature and contacts. And they don't use that. It's all electronic fuel injection stuff now on today's cars. But same basic principle. If they don't fire at exactly the right time in sequence, the engine starts fighting itself, basically. The two pistons are competing with each other, and it creates a vibration.
But that mode's probably been eliminated for the most part because everything's electronic like that. We don't have those kind of mechanical wear outs of contacts as often.
No. Well, we do. I mentioned in our last episode, and they're back again today, is that he hasn't got his brakes fixed on this this big tree service chipping truck.
Right.
And
you know, why is he paying attention to his warning signs? That's the question
we have. And what it's like I started with is this new very sharp chainsaw blade is so much more productive and so much more efficient. And yet we mentioned it in the last episode, I think you did, is that there's also this emphasis on, well, if it's not broke, keep running. I mean, we got production to do. We got things to get done. These tree guys got work to do. And yet the parallel, though, is that for you – if your knee gets too painful, it makes it hard to move around at all. Well, I'm going to do preventative maintenance on this. I can schedule that and spend it half a day with a doctor and I'm good or better for quite a while. And I see that even here in the little water system that we have for our community is they've got a water treatment piece of equipment. It's called a water boy. And it basically takes the water, input water that we have from the creek, and it goes through a bed of sand and other media, they call it, to filter it. And then it's actually really, really good water when it comes out. But the machine itself has got these different steel plates and baffles and channels and things it does. And those are rusting out. They're it's like a $300,000 machine. It's not cheap to replace for our little community. And the chair of the board, kind of the one overseeing the capital improvement and fees and just the overall system, has an opinion of, well, we'll just sandblast it and repaint it and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Get rid of the rust spots. And I made the point to him that you know, those rust spots and those thin areas of the steel plates are there. The steel is there to separate bad water from good water.
Right.
And really don't want them going either direction through little holes or big holes. And sandblasting does really nothing to thicken the steel plate.
Right.
It's kind of the opposite. Right. You know, we can make it look good, but it won't work. It's just thinner.
Yeah. If you could take it out and replate it or put a material onto it, then that, you know, that would be a way of fixing that problem, or at least improving it. If that's replacing it would be the best thing.
Well, the best thing overall, and it's not just this one plate that they could weld another plate on it. And,
right.
You know, eventually these repairs and patches and things like that, the structure of it is overall wearing out, and right. Adding these things will decrease its efficiency. It'll do all these other things that are still going to cost us money. Yeah, we get another year out of it.
Right.
It's like ignoring the squealing brakes on a vehicle. Right. I get another day out of it. Right. But eventually that pain's going to get too bad. And right. Unfortunately, when the water system is unable to purify water, it shuts the water system off for the community.
Right. Yeah, that kind of gets serious.
It gets, you know, the consequence is pretty bad real fast.
Right.
And, yeah. You know, worst not case is that it ruptures and we have to replace it wholesale
right.
at today's emergency prices and all the other stuff. And right. they did that last time. It failed completely. The system they were using, it was a different kind of system, mm-hmm. but it, mm-hmm. I think there was it was either a flood or earthquake. It was the Loma Prieta earthquake that happened right. here in the Bay Area in 1989.
Okay.
And it destroyed the water treatment plant. Okay. If I remember right, it might've been a flood. In the '80s was really a bad time to live here. There was all kinds of disasters so we ended up with a 30-year loan, which we're just now paying off. And the equipment is only designed to last 15 years. So it's okay. Kind of, and the hard part is it's not like your knee that's sending signals in a regular basis going, hey, you know, you got to do something here. This isn't right. Stop walking. Don't put weight on this. You know,
you don't have a measurable, there's no other indicator other than the catastrophic breakdown of the system. You don't have anything, a leading indicator or measurement or something that would show you that there's some leakage or I don't know. You know, between the two plates or
well,
whatever.
Well, they do. There's a series of visual inspections. It's pretty okay. easy to check. And when mm-hmm. that, I mean, you can see the rust spots. You're seeing the iron content is going up in the water.
Right.
And the output, there's
these
a number
things
of things
can
we can get at. Yeah.
You can measure those. It's just like tire tread, you know.
Right.
I had to replace the tires recently. One of the reasons on my Honda was it was starting to hydroplane.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like that when I can't steer and you feel like your front tires are gliding on a, mm-hmm. on a water surface. So that was my leading indicator when it was a really hard rain.
Well, that's not a leading indicator. You're in trouble at that point, dude.
No, on dry pavement, it drove fine.
Okay,
it was
fine. You live in Colorado.
Well, that's right. And snow's going to be even worse. So, we went and replaced that. But, you know, another thing is, the question is, what are those indicators, some things that the wear out or something like a measurement. We were talking in the last episode about my Honda Pilot has a little percentage oil. They don't tell you, you don't change the filter based just on mileage, you know, where mm-hmm. you used to follow 3,000 miles, which is actually quite conservative as I heard from Click and Clack and the old Car Talk show. He said, you know, with today's synthetic oils, you can drive 5,000 miles. So, mm-hmm. you know, you're kind of going too much oil change if you do it at their recommended levels.
Right.
Now, of course, they're giving – I have a little LCD screen that shows me percentage of oil filter life left, you know, 60, 20, 30.
Well, that's the filter. I wonder if the filter fails quicker than the oil itself.
Well, that's a question, Fred. What are they measuring? What are they keying off of? What indicator is saying this is a wear out? Okay,
mm-hmm.
is it as we talked about? Is it the back pressure on the oil filter, which would say the oil filter is getting loaded with particulates and becoming less, and causing a back pressure because the oil doesn't flow through it as well as it did when it was new? And are they using that? Then that's, to me, a very valid indicator, because it would be variable on the amount of where you're driving, how you're driving. You're going up straight up mountains, mm-hmm, whether you're going just highway all the time, you get a different time. And I guess I could figure that out by measuring the mileage before I have to get that thing. But also I say, okay, it's starting to give me an indicator light, which was kind of annoying, at 10%. Well, okay. Do I want to throw out a filter that's got 10% life left in it?
Give or take the measurement error.
Yeah, right. There could be the measurement error in that?
Well, there's measurement error, but there's also, they probably guard banded it a little bit so that it doesn't go to complete failure.
Exactly. So even at 0%, if it said zero life left, it would probably not cause the car to seize up.
All right. So if any of our listeners have a tow truck in the Denver, Colorado, or you're in Fort Collins area, up that way,
up to Boulder County.
So if you have a fork or a tow truck, you can start following Kirk around, because any day, any hour now, his car's just going to stop running.
Now I went down to 5%, even though it had to turn off the little annoying indicator light all the time, but I finally did it, because it's an expensive thing to change. And, I don't like to do that before. I like to use all the life there is, and we all do. Maybe that guy on the truck, he got
– Well, he figures he's got another quarter inch of brake pad there, so he's good.
Yeah, exactly. And we kind of get used to knowing maybe, how much gas is really left in our tank when it's down to the E.
Not driving with you ever again. I'm going to come visit, but I'm going to rent a car.
But the question is, where do we say, okay, this is wearing out to a point that I'm at risk, or something's at risk, or we're in danger of catastrophic failure, as opposed to a gradual
failure?
You
could do oil analysis. You could pull a sample of your oil, say every month or so, and start tracking how the oil itself is performing. And it also gives you an indication of, do you have some problem in the engine or a contaminant source of some sort?
Would be another way of indicating whether your oil is actually, if your filter and your oil system is an optical measurement of looking through, it could be even an optical sensor that you could actually put on I'm just saying, in the design of the system, which I have no idea what they're using, what the cheapest way would be, but just having a optical sensor where you have a small amount of oil pass through it, and it can see its translucency,
But there's all kinds of ways to measure, not just oil. There's oil analysis, vibration, current draw.
Vibration analysis, that's right. I'm sure James is very familiar with that for machinery and production.
But even current draw or quality of your output. Like if you're doing a factory and you're seeing an increase in defective product coming out, well, it's time to change the cutter, or the labels aren't adhering directly.
Right.
So maybe the labeler has got an alignment issue, and you can see it changing slowly with time.
And that's where SBC came in.
That's part of it. Yeah, that's part of it. I think
seeing increase in variation.
Well, it's increase in variation, but I'm thinking of the wear out kind of things. It goes back to what you and I have talked about it a number of times, and I know we've talked about it with other hosts, is you need to pay attention to the failure mechanisms, the physics and chemistry of what's going on.
Exactly.
And then that comes into the question is, well, it might be great to measure my oil filter. If that's not really the problem, though, if my oil goes bad before the filter does, my engine's at risk.
Right.
And so is that the right thing? Hopefully the guys that designed your car, the folks that put it together, thought that through and know that the weakest link is the filter. And if you change the filter, you get the oil changed and you lose a little bit of life of the oil, it's more important to have good oil than potentially bad oil. But we can use oil analysis, vibration analysis, electrical signals, quality checks of the final output or the product. Like on your car, you could use gas mileage. right? What's right. What's my day-to-day mileage and how is that decreasing with time?
Sure.
There's a lot of variables that go into that. So right. The closer your measurement is to the failure mechanism that you're interested in, the more accurate you are at being able to do the predictive, like for your knees, you know that you want to avoid the pain, so you do a predictive or maintenance.
They told me that it's about 6 months. It lasts for about 6 months. So before it happens again, before I feel pain, which is my leading indicator, I will go in and get injections as a preventative, continuing preventative measure.
But that's based on time, right? So let's say you're taking it easy through the winter. You might be able to go 7-8 months before.
Could be, right?
But if you're out and active and walking around and chasing your kids around and grandkids or whatever, then you probably go a little less. So it'll probably vary. And it's like your oil filter.
Right.
The other piece of this, though, where you have it built into your system, is that you have to pay attention to it. You actually have to know you want to go look for this stuff.
Right.
And what I see in factories is all too often it's run to failure and then everybody gets excited and then you have no time and no money, no resources, no spares. Right. And you do what you need to do to get it up and running again.
Right. And you don't have time to do a failure analysis on it. That's the conflict of interest in, say, production equipment. When I was working on semiconductor processing equipment, there was millions of dollars of product waiting to go through to be processed. So the goal there was not to find out what the root cause was. And in fact, a success for the technician, for me, repairing the equipment was getting them back online. No matter if I had to replace five parts and it was only one that was broken, that was efficient. So there are some challenges to understanding that, physics.
And that's where the dilemma really comes in, though, isn't it, Kirk?
Yeah.
Is we need to understand what we're looking for in order to see what the symptoms are. And to know what part of our equipment we need to monitor, whether it's an oil filter or a pain sense, a nerve ending in your knee, is what do we need to instrument? Now, in the last 20 years or so, we've had so many breakthroughs on sensor technology, and the cost of those things have come way down.
Cheaper.
So we're able to do
smaller.
We're gather way more data.
Right.
And the Internet of Things is kind of the new buzzword through the manufacturing world. And just because they can put a sensor on it doesn't mean it's helpful. Let's make it sure that it actually leads to better maintenance programs and to more efficient use of our equipment.
Right. Tied to real life, physical mechanisms that have been proven or already known to be the leading cause of the failure. So, yes.
So there's plenty of tools and techniques out there. The first step by far, though, is just pay attention. If something's changing in your system and it's going to lead to a breakdown or a repair cycle or the production of bad or marginal products that will eventually fail more often in the field or loss of yield in your plant, like in your car, loss of efficiency, loss of, engine life.
Right.
Each of those things has to have a business case put to it what's the right realm to, if I can do the repair prior to your knee hurting, that's a good thing. It has a lot of value in the overall process. But if you're not paying attention to it until it gets unbearable, you're going to lose that ability to do it preventatively and avoid it altogether. So same with equipment, same with our cars, same with lots of things is we have to pay attention. And part of that goes with that understanding the failure mechanisms, which I think is we should have named the show Pay Attention to Failure Mechanisms instead of speaking of reliability is, go break things and find out why.
Right. But for sure, Fred, I agree that we've got to understand the failure mechanism, pay attention to the warnings, the indicators, symptoms before it wears out. But we also know that you know, even though we're getting close, we don't know necessarily the rate. Like your guy with the truck that's brakes are squealing. Mm-hmm. I says, oh, man, I heard that for a month, you know, last time and, you know, and I had no problem with it. Or he's in a busy season. Again, right. he can't afford to lose a truck for even a day. He said, I'll get to that when the season is over in another month. Well, he may get by with it. And in that case, it reinforces his letting the thing squeal.
Right, right.
He say, I did that, you know. Or a guy's in the factory says, oh, that thing makes it – that vibrates all the time. And, you know, it one time went vibrated for, you know, 3 months before we had a problem. So,
That's right.
You know, you have all those trade-offs. So it's a challenge. I have to say, having been a field service engineer, when you're in that mode, you're not looking for root cause. You're trying to just get that thing up and running.
That's right. And at that point, it's too late. You got to just do what you got to deal with. So as a listener, you know, what's your favorite symptom that you keep track of and follow and stuff? Or what's, you know, what kind of barriers are you seeing? Are the pushback on just keeping the equipment running, or you know, you're just too busy? Are those real? And I imagine they are. What's your story? Let us know. Head over to reliability.fm. You can find the Speaking of Reliability show in this episode and other episodes and other shows there. And there's plenty of places that you can leave comments and feedback for us. You can find us on LinkedIn. You can find us at Ascendo Reliability under the About section. Plenty of ways to get in touch with us. We'd love hearing from you. And we'd like to hear what your thoughts are on today's show or on any questions you got on in your mind that you'd like us to talk about.
That's the way we get better.
It is. And it's been feedback. Fun. Makes our day when we get a comment or a question and stuff. It is great.
Yeah. Great. So thanks for listening, everybody.
All right. Thanks, Kirk. Talk to you later. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.